What is going on, concert viewers and listeners of the multiverse? Welcome back to Geek Talk with Brian Bird 16. If you're new to this channel or perhaps this podcast, welcome. I'm glad you decide to either view or listen. And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast for all the updates and, you know, for more content. Actually, speaking of updates, I'm going to give you some right now. Actually, I'm planning on producing more comic book reviews and show reviews in the future. I'm starting to get the hang of this podcasting thing. I mean, I know I've said this probably in the past, I would produce more content though, but I haven't gotten around to do it because of being so busy though. But now that I'm starting to get the groove of like how my podcast episodes work and what works and what doesn't work, I'm going to start producing more content, more comic book reviews, like I said. And I'm also planning on interviewing some cosplayers in the future, some other creators, and perhaps some fans of like different genres like anime, horror, science fiction. And if you're actually viewing the podcast right now on YouTube, you can actually see in the back that I'm a fan of pretty much a whole lot of stuff. You see my Boba Fett helmet in the back over there. So yeah, like that's what I'm planning on doing more stuff with the podcast. I'm also even planning on doing more skits with my cosplaying too, because I started to get into cosplay recently and I'm doing a lot of cosplay skits. And if you go on my Instagram, Brian from Earth 16, you will see that I did a Thanksgiving skit with all my cosplays where I'm Mr. Knight, I'm Zenitsu Akutsama, I'm also Clark Kent, who's actually presenting the whole Thanksgiving dinner. He's invited almost like all my cosplay characters. I'm also Boba Fett and King Ezekiel from Walking Dead and Negan from Walking Dead. So it's really funny. Just give it a watch. And I'm also going to post it on YouTube as well. So I'm planning on doing more of those just to show you a different side of what I do. In addition to doing podcasts and writing articles for The Daily Planet and Dark Side of the Force. So there's that. And on December 17th, I'm going to be in Glendale at the Gambate Outdoor Anime Event in Arizona. So come by and see me. I'm also going to be doing a live stream of that whole event. So you'll be seeing me doing different activities, hopefully interacting with other people or other cosplayers or other anime fans like myself and all that good stuff. So I'm just going to pretty much start expanding the palette of the podcast. Of course, I'll still be interviewing comic book creators, but I'm also going to be interviewing other creators and, like I said, other fans too as well. And speaking of other creators and fans, I'm actually interviewing a creator and a diehard anime fan. He's a fan of the legendary anime of Lupin the Third. And for those of you who don't know, Lupin the Third is about a thief who, he's sort of a great character. He's a really interesting character. And he has a partner, or several partners of his, that take part in his little adventures. And he's always on the run, but then I wouldn't say he's morally ambiguous still, but I mean, I guess it's the best way you can kind of describe him. I mean, I haven't watched Lupin the Third as much though, but this was the anime that inspired, it was pretty much the anime that inspired other animes like Cowboy Bebop and among others. And the creator name is Chris De La Sola, if I pronounce his name correctly. I kind of forgot, but we had a really great conversation. It was a really great chat, man. He's doing an unofficial guide, if you will, of Lupin the Third. And it talks about a whole lot about like the characters, how it was created. Like it just goes down to the nitty gritty. And he's planning on releasing the book as around next year. And it's going to be released in bookstores like Barnes & Noble. Of course, it'll most likely be released on Amazon. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be a really interesting read. And I'm looking forward to actually getting my copy. And we talked a whole lot about the Lupin the Third and the anime and how it inspired in other animes and just how awesome it was and how why it's so legendary. So yeah, in this episode, without further ado, here's Chris De La Sola, where we talk about his unofficial guide of Lupin the Third. So grab your popcorn, sit back, relax, and enjoy my chat with Chris De La Sola on his book, The Unofficial Guide to Lupin the Third. Welcome to Geek Talk with Brian Furt 16, where we talk all things geek, including cosplays, video games, and comic books. I'm here in this episode today. I'm here to speak to Chris. Let's see, how do you pronounce your last name?
we pronounce it De La Sola. It's Italian.
De La Sola. Well, thank you so much. So we're here with Chris De La Sola to talk about his project on Lupin the Third, and it looks like it's an official guidebook for Lupin the Third.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
about as official as you can get when it's unauthorized.
Awesome. Well, I mean, it looks really awesome. First of all, thank you for being on.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, how you been, first of all?
Busy as always, working nonstop on the book, which you can see one of the flyers back there, actually, for it. But, yeah, it's been good. It's been productive. Because I feel like people are going to ask, like, well, when's it coming out? I don't know. I just know sometime early next year, spring, summer, around that ballpark. That's the most I can say, really.
Okay. Well, yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, some projects, you know, do take time, and sometimes, you know, especially in the creative world, I mean, it's not always like, how can I say this? It's not always set in stone. Sometimes stuff comes up, or there's several factors.
The only advice I would give is don't set a deadline, because you'll never meet it. You know, the more something, you know, like a project like this, because Lupin the Third is a series that's, you know, it's still going, and it's been an anime franchise for little over 50 years now. So that's not only is that a lot of ground to cover, but when you're, when you enter in the factors of things like, well, you're a writer, you're a passionate fan of the property, you're not always just going to be satisfied with, well, that's everything, isn't it? No, probably not. I'm sure there's more in there that needs to be uncovered, that needs to be talked about. So that ends up halting a few things, where I'll write a chapter and be like, all right, that's it, because that's all I can find. And then there's just that itch in the back of your head of, well, what if there's more that could be included?
Well, speaking of what's in that this whole project, what are the examples of the chapters that you've written about? Like, can you give us an idea of, like, what's being covered in this guide?
Pretty much everything. Because, you know, like I said, it's a franchise that's, you know, 50-plus years old, so there's roughly... I mean, we have two new ones coming out. We have a new one coming out this December, which is, like, a prequel series.
Oh,
and
wow.
Sometime early next year, there's going to be a crossover with the cat burglar anime Cat's Eye. So there's like, they're still making things even as I'm writing it, so I obviously can't include absolutely everything, but it's everything like that is, you know, been released up to that point. And that's, you know, at right now that's about 58 different things. There's side stuff that, you know, is either not animated or not technically officially part of it. Like I do cover for like hardcore fans, there was this anime variety show called Mankatsu, which was adaptations of Monkey Punch or Kato-san, that was the original comics creator of Lupin. They're adaptations of all his other work, but because Lupin is the household name and like the big draw, they were like, well, we can't do this without some Lupin in there. So in between segments, they have these little shorts of the Lupin gang. So it's like, well, since they're in it, I'm never gonna hear the end of, hey, how come you didn't put that in the book? They're in it. It's like, yeah, but they only make up like, I counted, they only make up about 4% of the whole show,
right?
But I guess I have to cover it, because like, well, it's kind of like partially related, and you know, it'd be easier to just put it in there than to just omit it and then never hearing the end of why didn't you include it. And then there's all this live action stuff, like, you know, they did two live action movies way back when. They did a live action, I guess you could call it a mini series, for the Inspector Zenigata character. And all that stuff, you know, with the exception of, I guess, maybe the first live action film, they're not really available in the States, which was another hurdle of getting a hold of things that are not available here, or at least not yet. So there's been a lot of importing, you know, getting in there, watching them, and, you know, dissecting them. So really, the long and the short of it is the book just covers every entry. So it starts from the pilot film from 69 to, well, I guess right now it's probably going to have to cover the prequel series Lupin Zero, which comes out this month, this following month. So, you know, that's, it's just reviews of each one, you know, at a star rating. So like, you know, out of 4 stars. So, This one gets 4 stars, this one gets 3 stars, that sort of thing. To basically, the idea was to make a book in the same vein as like Letter Malton's movie guide, where it's like, here's everything, here's my assessment of what are the best ones in the series, which ones I think you must see, which ones are like, you could skip that one. Because when you try to introduce a series to people, the first thing that's, you know, sort of an obstacle is like, that's a lot of content. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's not One Piece levels of a lot of content, but it, from outsider looking in, that's a lot of stuff. And it's like, well, where do you start? Well, technically, you can start anywhere, but it just feels more concise to have a chronological guide of here's everything, here's the significance of everything, you know, what they represent, whether or not they're good, if they're the best in their field, you know, their best Lupin, or if it's just dumb fun entertainment. And I try to be as fair as possible, because I think there's only a small handful that I would genuinely think are just outright bad.
Right. And so, like, in terms of, like, what would you, I don't know much about Lupin the Third, but I feel like it's a lot like most anime that I've seen, and that, little did I know, have, like, extensive, you know, like, extensive continuities or, like, prequels about them. Like, one of the anime that comes to mind is Rurouni Kenshin, Samurai X, and I had no idea that, I think they might have made a prequel series to all that, and they made some movies about him too, and I was like, wow, you know, like, there's more to this guy, and there's more to the story. And then it's funny too, because even with Dragon Ball too is another example, with how they have like a crap load of sagas on Dragon Ball, like from the time Goku's a kid to when he's a teenager, when he becomes a full adult, and then you have the very popular Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super. Dragon Ball GT, I mean, I wasn't really a big fan of Dragon Ball GT.
Most people weren't.
Yeah. Just with the way it was, you know? But Super is actually pretty good. And it's just, you know, for me, like, I think, you know, it's just, there's so much extensive continuities with these anime that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. So with Lupin, and I know you have a lot to cover, though. I mean, what'd you say would be the most important things to cover? Like, you know, concept art, or like the bio on the creator, or how you came up with Lupin?
Well, at least in my book, because a book by a, wouldn't say a mutual, but someone who I greatly respect, which is Reed Nelson. He's a sort of Lupin historian. So I guess you could say self-proclaimed. I don't want to, you know, say things on his behalf, but he worked closely with Discotech, the company that releases most of the Lupin here in the States, and he's done a lot of, you know, liner notes for those, he's done commentary tracks for that. He just put out what is essentially an art book with the cooperation of TMS, the company that produces Lupin in Japan, and, you know, that has concept art, that has bios of characters,
yeah,
and, you know, that sort of thing. So it definitely serves that purpose. Whereas mine, it's really more to just be, I guess you could call it's a film history or a reference guide, because it's more like, it's apples and oranges here, because Reed's book and my book are going for very different things. But in Reed's book, as someone who got it recently and read it, when it comes to like the behind the scenes and the history stuff, it's a bit light, because the focus is more on, here's these characters, here's, you know, every entry, but that's mostly about it. Like their synopsis or whatever the plural is.
Yeah.
You know, for every episode of every series, for every movie they did, for every TV special they did. But it only covers the animated stuff, because, you know, it's called 50 Animated Years of Lupin. So it omits things like the live action films, the live action shows, the Takarazuka musical with the all female cast. All of these are things I cover that he did not, which, again, you know, makes sense, because that wasn't the aim of his book. So I would say the point with my book is merely to just look under the look behind the curtain, sort of thing, of, you know, here's some behind the scenes stuff, here's some anecdotes from people who worked on it, and obviously there's interviews in the book from people of both sides of the globe. We have American actors and writers, but we also have Japanese writers, and right now we're trying to get one of the Japanese actors, so fingers crossed on that one. But That's basically the long and short of it, is that, you know, the book's aim is merely to just, here's everything, here's an assessment of the quality, in my opinion, you know, if any kind of useful information of, like, you know, here's what happened during the production, or, you know, stuff like that. So there's, you know, an introduction in the book that basically gives you a condensed, like, here's the general story, here are the characters, here's what they do and what they mean, and let's move on from that and get into, you know, the films and shows themselves.
I really, you know, the interesting thing about Lupin the Third for me, Matt, is, like, you know, the animation. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of, I mean, obviously it's animated, you know, it's an animated work, but it's just kind of like, it's very kiddie, but then it's also serious too, you know, it, like with comics too, especially, you know, they're like the comic Persepolis is one thing that comes to my mind. It's like, even though it's kind of the way it's drawn, you know, it's kind of like childish, but then it's like really serious too at the same time. And I feel like it's like that with Lupin, where there's this skinny dude, just, you know, the way he moves, you know, it's just really ridiculous. But then, you know, you can tell he's like actually a badass, and like how he just like, you know, shoots at people sometimes, like he has to fight his way out of, you know, I saw several clips of Lupin the Third where he's got to fight his way out of certain situations with his partner, and there's always this cop chasing them. I mean, are they like bounty hunters or something? Or are they like, you know, con men?
Well, they're thieves. Like the abridged version is that Lupin is a master thief. He, hence the, you know, third suffix. He's the third generation of master phantom thieves, whatever you want to call them. Arsène Lupin, who was a French thief of literature, which Monkey Punch, or Kato-san, which I prefer to call him, but Kato-san was a big fan of, because in Japan, European literature is like really highly regarded. So Arsène Lupin was a favorite of his, and he basically made the character the descendant of that. So hence why he's Lupin the Third. So he's the grandson. His partners are Daisuke Jigen, who is a sharpshooter modeled after James Coburn. There's the samurai Goemon Ishikawa the 13th, who is descendant of the original Goemon Ishikawa of legend. And there's his on and off fling, which is Fuchiko Mine, who's sort of like the Bond girl of sorts, and the cop
femme fatale
who chases them. Yeah, the femme fatale, you know, because she's a bit of a thief herself, tends to backstab Lupin. And all four of them are pursued by Inspector Zenigata, who is the police officer for the ICPO. And his goal, he's basically the Tom to Lupin's Jerry, is that, you know, Zenigata will always try and catch him, but Lupin will always find a way to get away. And that sort of right there, that's the show. Like, that's rinse, repeat. You know, they change the setting, they change the heist, they change the MacGuffin every time. So they're either they're pulling a heist in San Francisco, or they're hunting for some supernatural element that might, you know, control time. Like, there's, with Lupin, it's always best when you're going into it to just not expect, you know, anything, because you are going to get some cartoon antics of like, the hell is this?
Yeah,
it's Lupin the Third. You just kind of accept it at that point. And really, it's good you make the point of, you know, it's like a comic, because, I mean, obviously that, you know, a lot of that has to do with the fact that it was a manga, but it was because Kato-san was heavily inspired by the likes of Mad Magazine. You know, when you look at the original drawings of the manga, you can absolutely see the inspiration. But it was very much unlike any manga of its time, which was really emphasizing, you know, a lot of the comedy. Also, the fact that the way it looked like no other manga at the time. You know, it was very sketchy looking.
Exactly.
It was very crude, but that was part of its charm. You know, it was incredibly crass. Like, Lupin in the manga is the furthest thing from a likable protagonist that you could get. He lightens up over time, but those original entries, oof. Not very kosher today.
Kind of like Superman too, like how he was originally created. I mean, Superman would just like clock the crap out of anybody, you know, and like and especially in his early comics, like the very first Action Comics, you know, one, he was just like, you know, beating up people, you know, who did bad and like, or yeah, he was just like, he was not one to mess with. And but then like, you know,
I wouldn't want to mess with
him. I wouldn't want to mess with him either. Exactly. And then a couple years later, obviously he lightened up to the hero that he is today, but it was just like, that was just one dude he didn't want to mess with. And even with the mask, like, you know, I remember someone from another podcast brought up the mask, and I didn't know about this about the mask, where the mask from the comics is very different from Jim Carrey's mask, where he's more, you know, the mask from the comics is just, he's more crude, he's more, I mean, he's more brutal and kind of like sadistic at times. So whereas Jim Carrey's mask is like a goofball, and like the kids love him, obviously, though, but the mask in the comics was this.
Like I honestly think the mask is the most applicable example when it comes to Lupin the Third, of because, you know, Lupin in the comics is, you know, for lack of a better word, he's just an absolute bastard. Like, he's a twisted, crooked, just sadistic motherfucker. But, you know, in the later, it part of that, not really to be a, you know, pointing the finger and blaming, but a lot of that softening came about because of, you know, the legend Hayao Miyazaki, who did some entries for the earliest adaptation, which is now tentatively called Part One, although it was just called Lupin the Third when it came out in 71. But he was brought in along with Isao Takahata. You know, those two, of course, would go on to make Studio Ghibli or Ghibli, and they were brought in to sort of soften the show because Masaki Osumi, who was the director of Part One, wanted to do the manga proper. He wanted it to be a dark adult show, and back then that was kind of unheard of for prime time of an anime with an adult audience in mind, so that was kind of revolutionary. But it wasn't doing well in the ratings, so TMS, or you know, whatever the company was handling at the time, was like, we need to make this a little softer because I think we're losing our viewership because of how hardcore the show is.
Yeah.
So, you know, Osumi-san wouldn't bow down to their demands, so he left. And, you know, Miyazaki and Takahata came in, they changed the whole character's, you know, feel, they gave him like a moral compass and everything.
Kind of make him a little lighthearted, yeah.
Exactly. My friend and illustrator, Lauren, who's illustrating the book, she makes the comparisons of that the Miyazaki Lupin is what she calls watercolor Lupin, which I think is the best way to sort of differentiate the stuff. Because, you know, when they do Lupin, nowadays they kind of try and do a hybrid of, they want to have the crookedness, but they also want to have the, you know, soft protagonist aspect of Miyazaki, and, you know, try to merge them. And it works sometimes. But you can only do so much because you obviously have, you know, with Japanese standards and practices compared to American standards and practices, some stuff that's probably like, oh, that's so charming. In Japan, over here, it's like, eh. Yeah, a little, you know, collar tugging. But it was Miyazaki who really wanted to make him this. They sort of just stripped away all of the stuff that made him Lupin, but yet still made him a compelling character in those adaptations. So the Miyazaki stuff's always been mixed for me because Castle Cagliostro is a masterwork for, you know, a film and animation. But as a Lupin adaptation, it's like, it's not quite, like, if you showed someone this movie and then you showed them everything else, it's going to be like, what the hell is this? Like, what happened? Yeah. Now he's like very grabby and touchy and basically almost molesting people. Like, yeah, it's not that. Miyazaki toned all of that down, you know, to make him more likable. But in every other stuff, like, you know, gloves are off, so to speak, of just, they make him, he's not as aggressive as the manga, but there's still traces of the, you know,
the crudeness,
the sex pest, I guess, would be the way to look at it.
I mean, kind of, you know, I feel like they kind of had to find a way to kind of like hint at how he is, or they kind of push the envelope a little bit just to do that. I mean,
oh yeah, I mean, the ones that definitely pushed the hardest, you know, besides Part One, which, you know, was again revolutionary for its time, it would be the Takeshi Koike stuff. You know, for those maybe not in the know, Takeshi Koike is an animation, you know, Japanese animation director, probably most well known for Red Line, the animated racing film, and he's done a few Lupin things. He was the lead character designer for the Woman Called Fujiko Mine show. And then he directed these spin-off films, which are sort of kind, you know, you're a comic book fan, so you definitely understand the whole, like, it's sort of within a universe that's separate from this one sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's tentatively called by fans the Quakegameverse, because they're very much their own continuity, but they are extremely dark and kind of light on comedy. Like, there's comedy in them, but the emphasis is not on the laughs. The emphasis is on the characters and the dark stories they want to tell. Like, and they are brutal. Like, by the name itself, Goemon's Blood Spray is probably the best one in that series. It's the sort of the Empire Strikes Back of the series, and it is gruesome. Like, I for an animated film, I have never seen the amount of detailed carnage that I saw in that one. Like, I even wrote in the book, it's like, its fight scenes are on the same level of something like Old Boy. It's just completely brutal what they do in that movie. So there are some that really do want to push what the manga was doing with its violence, with its, you know, graphic content. But usually, to save face, they shy away slightly from that. You know, violence is very minimal or almost cartoonish sometimes. They very rarely have anything that's, like, objectionable, I guess you could say. But, I mean, anyone getting shot in the head or, you know, attempting to grope a woman, I'd argue is objectionable in principle. But, you know, when it comes to Lupin, that's just par for the course.
I mean, I mean, kind of represents the character in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I feel like, I think I've read somewhere where several other anime was inspired by Lupin. Like, you know, Cowboy Bebop, I think, was inspired, mm-hmm. I want to say.
Shinichiro Watanabe, who, you know, was the director of Cowboy Bebop, he outright said in an interview for, I think it's called New Type, was the magazine. It's a Japanese magazine. Mm-hmm. He outright stated that Masaki Osumi, who directed, you know, portions of Part 1, his directing style was his approach when directing Cowboy Bebop. So there's a lot. And when you watch the Osumi episodes of Part 1 as a Cowboy Bebop fan, and in fact, it's because of Bebop that I sort of became interested in Lupin, because I read the same thing of, oh, there's an anime that inspired Cowboy Bebop. I kind of want to see that. But back then, it was kind of hard to, you know, come by because very few things were even released in America. But yeah, when you watch them, you can absolutely see the parallels of stuff like that. And I tend to say to people, Lupin the Third is your favorite anime's favorite anime.
It's sort of like
Yeah, it's sort of like the John Carter of anime, where it's inspired so many things, yet nowadays very few people know about the source of all your favorite things. Like, you could turn on almost any anime, and if the character is doing, a running from, a three-quarter angle, you absolutely can guarantee that's a nod to Lupin, because it's one of the most iconic shots in the entire series.
Yeah.
It's been referenced to things like Ginray. Even Redline referenced it, you know, confirming Koike as a fan. God, I know there's not Galaxy Express 999. What's the Galaxy Star? What am I thinking of?
Outlaw Star?
Yes, Outlaw Star. I think it's Outlaw Star I'm thinking of. I know there's an anime. God, I have, like, on my hard drive, I have, like, a PowerPoint presentation where I was talking about this very topic, and I was using examples, because that shot alone has been referenced many times. So, yeah, Lupin has, it's that thing of, it's highly inspirational, but mostly within its borders. Like, the closest to American inspiration, sadly, most of it is, I say sadly, but, you know, Castle Cagliostro is highly inspirational. Like, the director, Gary Trousdale, who people might know, he did Atlantis, The Lost Empire for Disney and a bunch of other, like, classic Disney Renaissance films. He outright states in a commentary track that a scene in Atlantis is ripped straight from Castle Cagliostro. Even people on The Simpsons have mentioned, like, oh, this scene, we lifted it from Castle Cagliostro. So because of the Miyazaki affiliation, that's a highly inspirational piece. And as many, including myself, have said, the sad thing about Castle Cagliostro is It's the most well-known Lupin media, but it's the least well-known Hayao Miyazaki film. So it's got that problem of some kind of know it. It's got that same stigma of it's a director's first film, so not everyone knows it.
Wow.
But because it's Miyazaki's first film, people will discover it, but also not realize, well, this is part of a series. Like, it's not it's not a one-off thing. Yeah, you know, it's a self-contained picture. But it's like, you know, that little title up there that says Lupin the Third. This is part of a series. You're watching a film adaptation of a series. And because I know, like, people like John Lasseter, you know, the former head of Pixar Animation, has said that Castle Cagliostro is one of his favorite movies. So it has influence. There's rumor mills out there of other people who are evidently inspired by Lupin here in the States. The only one I can concretely say is true is like the new DreamWorks film, The Bad Guys. The people behind the scenes have outright said that they took Lupin in as inspiration. More specifically, the 3D film they did, Lupin the First. They took that in as inspiration for The Bad Guys. So that's probably the most mainstream recent example of an American-produced production that used Lupin as a basis. Lupin and European comics, you know, like Tintin and Asterix and Obelix, stuff like that.
And Astro Boy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow. So I was wondering, too, like, what got you into wanting to do this guide?
I mean, I was anticipating that. So I guess buckle in. Basically, I've been a Lupin fan for years. And I think, like any fandom, I think everyone has that. They get into it, then there's sort of a dry spell, either because there's just not a whole lot happening, or, you know, something happens and, you know, you're whisked away to something else. I became a Lupin fan, and I'd say around 2010, 2011, because a friend of mine had sort of introduced it to me, because he had talked about this thing. And I was like, "What is Lupin the Third?" At first, I was getting it confused with Ranma One Half, because just like the name, name and then numeral is like, is it like Ranma One Half? Like, what? Why is it Lupin the Third? I don't understand. And, you know, he'd explain to me, he's like, oh, it's this, like, long-running series, you know, it's got a few movies. There's not a whole lot out there, like, you know, within our borders. But, you know, check it out. It's really good. And so I had found it. I had discovered the Adult Swim dub of Part 2, which is kind of now lives in...
Oh, man, Adult Swim. I remember those days.
Yeah. Well, that dub kind of lives in sort of meme infamy nowadays. Like, there's all these uploads now of, like, you know, compilations of like funny moments, because people are in utter disbelief that was a real dub, and it was. I know all the behind the scenes of that now. But then 2019, 2018 rolls around, and the first trailer drops for the first, which of course I'm like jaw dropped, like, oh my god, this looks fantastic. And I was talking to a friend in Discord who was also expressing, like, yeah, it looks so good. And I'm like, wait, you know what Lupin the Third is? And then we started just like, you know, talking about how much we love Lupin. And of course, all our other friends are like, well, what's Lupin? Oh, Lupin. And we start talking about it, and they're like, that sounds interesting. I want to watch it. And then it was at that point where I went, I don't have a lot of Lupin, because, you know, I'm a collector of physical media. I don't have a lot of Lupin, if at all. I need to change that, because then it became an inspiration to, I got to get all these things so that I can watch them, you know, with these friends of mine who are now interested, so I can share this character that I really love with them. So I spent like a good 3 months just buying every single thing that was available, stuff that was even out of print. So, you know, we did that, and sharing it with them was great. So it was from there, you know, because then the pandemic rolls around and we're stuck inside and all we have to do is watch things like Lupin, talk about Lupin. And then I see on Twitter that people are discovering it, you know, going on about how great the first looks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was being trapped inside, seeing Lupin getting rediscovered on social media, and, you know, sharing it with people who were friends of mine, you know, them getting into it, that I thought there needs to be a guide of some sorts to sort of introduce this character to people. So that got the gears rolling of, well, no one's done it. Why don't I do it? Like, I know enough about this series, and I could do a little research. You know, I already do too much Googling, and then it just ballooned from there, because I wrote, you know, a concept. I didn't have a publisher or anything. Like, I was just sort of, you know, shooting in the dark. And it was due to a book I had bought at the time called The Canon Movie Guide, which is a great book by Austin Trunick. Those who like trash films and B-movies, definitely read that book.
Evil Dead sort of Man.
Stuff like that. Yeah, they were famous for, they did Superman 4. Canon Films did Superman 4, which some of us, we don't talk about.
Right.
But it was because of that book, I was reading it, I thought, this is a great, I want to write something like this. You know, it's a comprehensive guide, it's got interviews, you know, it was a great read. And I, you know, flip on the back and I noticed the publisher, Bear Banner Media. I went, wait, I know this publisher. I have like several books by these people. It's an odd, like, it's not like Random House or Simon and Schuster. It's like, it's not a known name. So I go and look them up and I find out that they take book submissions. Like, there's an open submission form. And I went, okay, this is a long shot, but what if I pitch the book to these people? Like, I know they predominantly mm-hmm. focus on film and television. A lot of it, like, retro stuff, stuff from the 50s to the 70s. But, you know, what I'm pitching started in the 70s. So, you know, it's different. They don't have a lot of books on animation, let alone Japanese animation. So I wrote one chapter. The first chapter, of course, was Castle Cagliostro, because, like, it's the most, you know, it's the most you can talk about. A lot of people do know it, and it's probably the best, like, selling point when you're pitching a project like this. So I spent a few days writing that chapter. I submitted it to the publisher, you know, explaining my idea. Like I said, this is an example chapter. Like, I'll be writing more like this. And I get an email back from the guy saying, oh, I love this. Let's do it.
And nice.
All right. I guess I just got a book deal. So that's basically as best as I could TLDR, that was the development process of the book. So from early, I guess you could say, inception to, you know, its eventual getting picked up and, you know, me fully working on it practically nonstop since then.
All right. That's awesome, man. I mean, like, and you said it's going to come out like sometime next year.
Sometime next year, I would say ballpark spring, summer. So mm-hmm. my manuscript is due in May. I can most definitely have it turned in before May. That would be my idea. But obviously, it's up to my publishers to how long it takes from manuscript delivery to, you know, production of printed copies sort of thing. So stuff like that is not up to me. And the other thing that people constantly ask is, well, how much is it going to cost? I don't know. That's, as far as I know, that's not up to me. That's up to the publisher, you know, how they deem, all right, we get this split and you get that split, and this covers the cost because it's, you know, this big a book. You know, the bigger the book, the more it's going to cost, obviously, because that's a lot of trees that need to be cut down.
Exactly. Speaking of which, is there going to be like a digital copy version or anything like that? Or
there
like
is. There is going to be an ebook, a paperback, and a hardcover, as far as I know, all of them at the same time. The only thing that is not on the horizon right now is an audiobook. A lot of people do ask about audiobooks. I'm not against doing one, but that's almost a second book, really, because you're basically asking me to read hundreds of pages, thousands yeah. of words, and we have to do that in several sessions. You know, there have been people who have expressed interest in participating, like one of the Lupin actors, Dan Warren, who does audiobook reading for a living, has said, you know, hey, if you need anyone to read the book, I'd be happy to do it. So, you know, there's obviously interest, but it's all about, you know, because I would have to pay for it myself. The publisher does not fund those kinds of projects because they're an independent publisher. Their whole thing is that you just submit the manuscript and they do everything else. You know, they do the pressing, the printing, and the distribution to, you know, outlets. So the compromise is obviously that you don't get paid to do it, and you know, you're going to get paid when the book is in people's hands and people are buying it. So the production of an audiobook would depend solely on how well the book sells as it is. So if it does well enough, then we'll look into it. If it does okay, then it would still happen, but it would be a long, long time, because that would be an exhaustive process to do.
Nice. So, I mean, right now we're kind of running out a little time, though. So, mm-hmm. do you have, like, any social media handles that we can follow?
Certainly, yes. I would say the one you should go to is Twitter. I know there's a lot of doom and gloom with Twitter, but that's where I am. That's what I tend to use the most. So on Twitter, it's at aficionado Chris. So AFICIONADO and then Chris, CHRIS. You can follow that. I post a lot of updates on the book, progress reports, stuff like that. And obviously, you know, you can join the mailing list to get updates for, you know, when the book is ready to ship out, if I'm doing book signings in your area. And for that, you can just go to tinyurl.com/themasterthieffiles, and it'll give you an auto email that you just send that, you end up on the mailing list, and you get cataloged for stuff like that. Otherwise, I'm kind of on Instagram, so there it's aficionados, Chris, so same as Twitter, just add an S after aficionado, because Twitter wouldn't allow the full name, I could only take out one letter, and I'd rather be aficionado Chris than aficionados cry. So that was my reasoning for that. And
clever man.
I have a website. You go to fishoutschris.com, and from there you can basically find all my, you know, socials and things like my YouTube and my Twitter and stuff like that. So I would say go there first and, you know, pick your poison, I guess.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's been great. I'm looking forward to getting this book, especially when it comes out sometime next year. Would it be like on a Kickstarter or anything like that, or
nope, it'll be straight to distribution. Like, nice. As soon as that manuscript is in and Bear Manor Media have it, they're going to be printing copies, they're going to be available on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. That much I can say.
That is awesome, man. I'm looking forward to getting it. I'll be sure to like subscribe to your email and all that, so that way I can keep on the lookout and just purchase the book. And maybe I'm going to watch some Lupin the Third, too, since I'm watching a lot of Rurouni Kenshin right now.
Best thing I could say, if you want to watch Lupin the Third, you have plenty of places to watch them, including free. You can go to Pluto TV or Tubi. There's a lot of Lupin the Third that's available on those for any of you guys listening and or watching. If you're curious, go to those places. Just look up Lupin the Third. You'll find plenty to watch.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for all for watching and listening. This is Brian from Earth 16, and this is
Aficionados Chris, or Chris Delasola.
Signing out. Thank you so much, y'all. You have a good one.